Your attention, please. The lid is on. Thank you and good night.
2016 will always be remembered by those of us telling audio stories here at the United Nations as the year of the podcast. With The Lid Is On, we tried to bring you a more in-depth, intimate and informal approach towards the extraordinary events and people who make up the UN, especially here at headquarters in New York. I'm Matthew Wells, and as the year draws to a close, we've a special programme today featuring some of the best moments from our first season of podcasts. Podcasting gives us the chance to move away from daily news and feature stories we don't often have time to tell. Our series began in March when the writer and star of the immigrant-themed historical drama Brooklyn came to visit. The moving story about one young Irish woman leaving home for a new life in America in the 1950s resonated with many of us working here, together with the friends who came along to a special screening of the Hollywood film. I met Daniela, Olga and Cleopatra as the closing credits rolled, whose families all hail from different countries around the Mediterranean.
We have two homes, really. And our home is here, but at the same time our heart is in our motherland. So I say I have two motherlands now.
Something that's very true for everyone, or for many people that are at the UN headquarters as staff members, but I guess also for anybody who comes to New York for whatever reason and decides that they want to stay.
You know, we always talk about emphasis on coming somewhere, but I think people that you leave behind always look at, oh, the lucky one. It is a land of opportunities, a land where you can make something out of your life, but that being torn apart all the time. I can tell you, I mean, they say 5 years. I think I'm still getting acclimated 24 years later because there's this period where you are here wishing to be there. You figure out the technicalities, the people that can help you out, but emotionally, how do you deal with that and where do you belong?
Is what the film does mainly to try and, or to give people some insight who haven't made the journeys we've all made, does it give them some empathy for understanding what it's really about?
I'm American, but from immigrant parents. And it just, I was telling my friend Olga that I think it resonates somehow, especially in this country. I think everybody can relate to this story. I felt I've made that journey. It wasn't me, it was my parents, but it's so, those feelings are so strong.
It's a beautifully understated film because in a way there isn't sort of much extremism going on in terms of any of the drama.
That's why it was so touching.
What resonated with me now, touching on a female subject of that, when she goes back to Ireland, there is a promise of a wonderful life all of a sudden, and a beautiful house and a mansion and a lovely man and all of that, which the heart wants what the heart wants. And that's something that, I'm sorry, it's just very hard to explain sometimes, even to your own self, the choices you make. And at the end of the day, one thing about the hosts, the people that welcome you, I lived in six countries, and everywhere where I've been, it's precisely because ordinary people, be it a priest, be it a baker, people who take you in, who invite you home for Thanksgiving, because you don't know what Thanksgiving is like. And even after all these years, that's just, it's just touches home so much. I'm sorry.
It's a sad film, but it's full of kindness, isn't it?
It's kindness, and it gives hope. I think at the end of the film, I felt there is hope. There's hope for Syrian immigrants. There's hope for us who are so far away. I don't want to react differently to a bombing in Paris versus bombing in Homs or Aleppo or somewhere else just because we're used to it. And I think these kinds of things, we needed this discussion. We needed to wake up that humanity in us. I believe we have it. I mean, I'm more optimistic, I think, than that. But I think we need to talk about it.
The voices there, which ended our first ever podcast, inspired by the Oscar-nominated movie Brooklyn. In July, we brought you a podcast about the continuing fight to end AIDS and the spread of HIV. We did an in-depth interview with fashion designer and longtime AIDS campaigner Kenneth Cole, a New Yorker who was appointed a UN Goodwill Ambassador this year. But podcast presenter Jocelyn Sambira also spoke to Lois Maturu of Zimbabwe, whose life could have fallen apart when she found out she was HIV positive, following the death of her mother and son from AIDS. Antiretroviral drugs have helped her lead a somewhat normal life, and in turn she's dedicated herself to coaching young teens and adults dealing with HIV and AIDS. It's hard to imagine she once tried to end her own life. Here's Lois.
Knowing about my HIV status, it was one of the most depressing moments for me, and it pained my heart so much. I lost all my confidence that I had, and I thought I was going to die. That was the end of me, because My mother and my younger brother had all passed away in the same week due to HIV and tuberculosis. And in 2002, by that time, I was 10 years old. So it was really a depressing moment for me.
Growing up, what was your interaction with your friends, schoolmates?
There's this silent stigma, which is not like direct, especially when I stayed with one of my family members. I went through emotional abuse, I went through physical abuse, shouting at me, saying, do you think you're special? If you want to die, just die. It's not me who made you to become HIV positive. Go and cry at your mother's grave. You know, saying such kind of things, and people within the next door could actually hear what he would say, and everyone at the end of the day got to know that Lois is HIV positive. So hearing such kind of words in my life, and at that time I was still at school, I tried killing myself by taking all of the medication that I had, and I said, I am so sick and tired of this situation that I have, and I said, I just want to die. I cannot contain this. I just need to die. So I was admitted to the clinic, to the hospital. And after I got discharged, I got massive counseling from the organization that I'm working with back in Zimbabwe. And they counseled me after I got discharged. And I said to myself, if I'm to live again, I want to make sure that I share my story and breaking the silence.
A lot of people feel that this generation is ignoring the epidemic, and that could be a problem in trying to get rid of it.
I can say to a greater extent it's very true. This is because of stigma and how HIV was introduced when it came. Back in Zimbabwe, I always talk with a group of children who are in schools, and their greatest issues that they say about HIV is that I fear to know that I have HIV. And there was a study that was done in Zimbabwe, and it shows that adolescents and young people are not scared of HIV, but they are scared of getting pregnant, because pregnancy, a person can easily see it and people can talk about it, than when you're HIV positive. You can just secretly take your pills and no one will know.
The extraordinary Lois Maturu talking there to Jocelyn Sambira. What happened when two UN policemen went in search of an alleged war criminal in the former Yugoslavia in the late 1990s? That was a scenario at the heart of our podcast presented by Daniel Dickinson in May. We reunited Vladimir Dzuro from the Czech Republic with his fellow officer Kevin Curtis from the UK in our studios in New York. The two men made history by delivering Slavko Dokmanovic to the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia, the first case of its kind. They gave the Lid Is On a vivid and disturbing account of what they'd witnessed in the fields of Croatia.
If you look at the pile of the dead bodies, terrible stench of because the decomposition, every day from 6 in the morning till 7 in the evening, it took all about 6 weeks, the exhumation. It was very emotionally difficult for everybody.
Yeah, even as a professional like you, it must have been difficult. I mean, you must have felt a duty of care to those dead people.
Yeah, especially if you know the stories. We actually interviewed many of those people, those who survived, all of them, and then the families. And the families are telling you the story about their husbands and sons. And then you know that you are standing on the side where those people that we interviewed have their relatives.
I'm Kevin Curtis. I'm a former UK police officer. I was also part of this team, a small team of five or six people. I was involved in many interviews. The thing about Vukovar, the area that we were looking at that time, it was a former holiday resort for much of the world. So you'd be going and interviewing people who were living in hotels, and you'd probably have 10 to a hotel room because there wasn't that much room. And the horror stories that were told about that had led up to it, where people were tortured. There were tortures that you wouldn't believe a human could think about doing.
Vladimir Dzuro and Kevin Curtis, friends to this day. Well, that's it for our look back at some of the highlights of our first podcast season. The Lid Is On. We'll be back in 2017. Thanks for listening.